can feel just what those words of that song were, facing your giants, because that is my message this morning. You know, several weeks ago, probably 4 or 5 months ago, when I was reading my Bible, I read from 1 Samuel the story of a giant being faced. This was a physical giant. I read the story of David facing Goliath. And as a child in Sunday school, I always loved to hear that story because it was a story of victory. We all like stories of victory, don't we? Well, I kind of thought at that time, you know, I'm going to jot that down as one of the topics that I would like to preach about sometime. Little did I know that Kevin was going to resign in a couple of weeks and that I would be asked to be one of those that would fill the pulpit occasionally until we find another pastor. So this is it, facing your giants. We all had an opportunity the last several months to face a big giant in our nation, and that was COVID. We could depend upon the Lord as David did and have faith as we face that giant, or we could be like the Israelites were many times and grumble, grumble, grumble. All you have to do is read in the Old Testament and see how ungrateful those Israelites were many times. Then God would bless them and they would be good for a little while. And then they'd go off and worship their idols and do all kinds of things that made God sad. Well, we faced our giant COVID in many, many different ways, but I'm not going to talk about that because that is in the past. We can learn from the past, but I'm going to talk about something much further away than that, and that is from the Old Testament in 1 Samuel 17. I'm going to talk first about David and Goliath, and then another type of giant, Ananias and Paul. That story's in the New Testament. And then I'm going to talk about facing our giants in 2021. So let me first start with David and Goliath, give you just a little bit of history. History tells us that the Philistines and the Israelite armies were always at war with one another. And 1 Samuel, which is our text for today, for the first part, tells us a little bit about that. In 1 Samuel 17, verses 3 and 4, just tell us about this. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with a valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall. Now, when we speak of a giant, we have to use our imagination. I've never seen one. Maybe you have. But I know a lot of children feel like my husband is a giant. For those of you that know Dean, he's 6'5". And we would see children at the grocery store or various places, and they would look from his feet all the way up to a child that was looking pretty high. And they'd say, gee, you're tall. And even now, as you learned a few minutes ago, he's in the hospital. And even the nurses would say, boy, you're long. How tall are you? Dean is 6'5". He's tall, but he's not a giant. According to commentaries, Goliath was from the Anakites, and they were known for their large size. If you remember back even earlier in the Israelite history, when Caleb, Joshua, and the 12 spies were sent into the promised land, and they were going to see what they had to deal with, some of them came back and they were afraid of the Anakites because they said that they were so large and they would beat them and they were giants. Well, they were really known for their large size. Goliath was from that group. He was probably about 9.5 feet tall. The scriptures say that he was 6 cubits and a span. Now, 6 cubits. A cubit was the length from your elbow to the tip of your middle finger. And my arms aren't nearly as long as some of yours, I'm sure. And a span was from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your little finger. So 6.5 spans would be 9.5 feet tall, or 6 cubits would be 9.5 feet tall. Some other manuscripts, there's some very early Greek manuscripts that say Goliath was probably about 6 feet 9 inches tall, which was still very big by ancient standards. So in addition to the large size of Goliath, he was wearing a bronze helmet, a metal coat of some sort, and bronze armor on his legs. Then he carried a heavy spear, and a shield bearer went before him carrying a big shield in front of him to protect him. And so this is what the Israelites were going against. Let us read from the 17th chapter again, verses 8 through 11. Goliath stood and he shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you are not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistine's words, Saul and all the other Israelites were dismayed and terrified. Scripture tells us that the Philistine presented himself every morning and evening for 40 days, inviting an Israelite to come before him. So can you imagine going out there? That's longer than a month in our time. Every day he would go out in the morning and in the evening, wanting someone to come and fight him. Well, talked a little bit about Goliath. Let's talk a little bit about David. Some of you will remember that David was the youngest of seven sons of Jesse. The three older brothers were a part of Saul's army and had gone away from home. As we know, David stayed home to tend the sheep for the family. One day, Father Jesse called him in and said, "I have a job for you, another job besides tending the sheep. I want you to go down to the battlefield and take some food. Take some dried grain. I'm going to give you 10 loaves of bread for your brothers. Then I want you to carry 10 cheeses to the captain. Then I want you to bring back the news." Now, we don't know whether, in this case, whether he meant by bringing back the news, bring back the news of your brothers, or bring back the news that I have done my responsibility to the army. Because in those days, if you can imagine, in those days, the families were the ones that fed the troops. So Jesse had done his obligation by giving the cheeses and those loaves of bread. Well, when David arrived at the army site, he left the supplies with a person called the supply keeper, and he went to check on his brothers. Well, while he was there, Goliath came and spoke as he had before, as I mentioned in verse 10, and the Israelite army fled out of fear. Now, David, who was filled with confidence in the Lord, had great faith in reply to what Goliath had said. "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Eliab, who was David's older brother, overheard David, and he was angry, and he snidely remarked to David, "Why did you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is. You came down just to watch the battle." David, of course, was offended, and he said, "Now what have I done? Can't I even speak?" While David was overheard and reported to King Saul, and Saul sent for him. While David was talking with Saul, he volunteered to go against the giant Goliath. Saul probably looked at this little shepherd boy and wondered, You want to go against that guy out there with the armor?" And King Saul objected to David going because of his small stature and his inexperience in the battle, of course, and because of his youth. But David expressed great faith in the Lord as he said that the Lord had delivered him from a lion when he was tending the sheep. Now, I don't know about you, but when I've gone to the zoo and have seen a lion, and he stands up and does his big roar, I do not think I would want to confront him if I was tending the sheep. But God defended David against that lion, and not only against a lion, but also a bear when he was tending the sheep. And he said Goliath defiled the armies of God when he spoke, and David knew that that was wrong. So finally, after some persuasion, Saul relented and approved David's going if David would wear Saul's armor. Well, Saul took off his armor, and David started putting it on and started walking. And he said, you know, I can't wear this. It's too cumbersome. So he took it off. He had no experience wearing such a thing. It was so cumbersome, so he went and he got his sling. He carried his sling. And he bent down and he took some stones from the brook. Now, a sling was just a piece of leather. I don't know about how big, but big enough to carry a stone. And it was not the kind of slingshot that my brothers used to have when they were young. But it was a sling, and it would have two straps on it. Some of you would remember in Vacation Bible School and Sunday School, we used to sing a song. Only a boy named David, only a little sling. Only a boy named David, but he could pray and sing. Only a boy named David, only a rippling brook. Only a boy named David, and five little stones he took. And one little stone went in the sling, and the sling went round and round, and round and round and round and round and round and round and round. And one little stone went up in the air, and the giant came tumbling down. And oh, we loved that last part when I was a kid. I guess I still do. Now, Goliath was insulted as he saw David approach. Goliath said, "Am I a dog? Come here, and I will give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." But David said in reply, "I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel." And he also said, "The battle is the Lord's." As the song, little chorus said, David picked up five stones from the brook. Now he took one of those stones and he did put it in his sling. Now history tells us that the stones used in those slings was usually about 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter. And of course, the sling was made of leather with two strings. As the sling was whirled around, the faster it went, one strap was let loose, and the stone could travel, listen to this, the stone could travel up to 100 and 150 miles an hour. They kept on whirling and whirling and whirling and then slung it out. And I read that again, and I thought, certainly that's a misprint. It must be 10 to 15 miles an hour. But no, it was 100 to 115 miles an hour. With that speed, of course, it had quite an impact. As David whirled his sling around and around, it flung towards Goliath. It hit him in the forehead, and as the little chorus said, the giant went tumbling down. He fell to the earth, and it killed him. Then David took Goliath's sword and struck the giant with the sword, cutting off his head. Literally, he said he was going to do that, and he cut off his head to give to the king. I learned that this was a common practice in the Near East, for the victor to cut off the head and give it to their ruler. And that's just what he did. Don't you love the story of victory? Now let's think about this story of victory. David had some obstacles to overcome, just like we do when we face our giants. The first thing was Eliab's attitude when he got out there on the battlefield or near the battlefield. His brother treated him with great disrespect. And then the second thing was the fear of the Israelite armies had for Goliath certainly must have had some kind of effect on David. The size of the giant. These were just immediate things that he might have thought about. And of course, his army inexperience. And Saul's objection to his going. And David's size. He was not a real, real big man. But in spite of these obstacles, David had some strengths. Just like we do. When we're facing our obstacles, there are certain strengths that we have if we look for them. Number one, David knew Goliath was wrong in belittling the Israelite army. He was confident because God had saved him from a lion and a bear. He knew that God had helped him before, and God would help him again. Thirdly, he was very experienced with a sling. But the last thing that he had was faith in the Lord. He believed that the battle was the Lord's. This last strength is overwhelming reason for victory. Faith is the victory. You know, there's a hymn that we used to sing. I'm not going to sing this one. I'm just going to read the words. Encamped along the hills of light, ye Christian soldiers, rise and press the battle ere the night shall veil the glowing skies. Against the foe in veils below, let all our strength be hurled. Faith is the victory, we know, that overcomes the world. Faith is the victory. Faith is the victory. Oh, glorious victory that overcomes the world. So faith is that victory. Now, we've talked about David and Goliath. Now I want to talk about another type of giant. In the New Testament, we learned about Ananias and Saul. In Acts 9 is the record of Ananias facing a giant. His giant was not 9.5 feet tall, but his giant was a huge problem to deal with. We have giants that aren't big physically, but they are huge just the same. Let's look at the background just a bit. Before Paul, or named Saul, became a believer in Jesus, he persecuted Christians. Chapter 9 in Acts reveals that Saul, later changed to Paul, asked for letters from the high priest, or those in authority, to take to the synagogues in Damascus, which was up north. Now, why would he do that? He wanted to do it to see if there were any followers of Christ there in Damascus. If so, Saul could take them as prisoners back down to Jerusalem. After obtaining those letters, Saul was on his way to Damascus when he was blinded by a very bright light. I want to read just a portion of that in Acts 9, verses 3 through 9, if you're following along. As he neared Damascus on the journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you persecuted. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." Well, the men that were traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but they didn't see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. Now, in the city of Damascus, where Saul was going, lived a faithful disciple by the name of Ananias. He also had a vision from the Lord. He was told to go to a certain house on Straight Street and ask for a man from Tarsus by the name of Saul. Ananias was shocked and probably trembling because Saul's reputation had preceded him. He told the Lord all the horrible things that he had heard about Saul, that Saul had been persecuting the Christians, not the type of person you'd want to confront. However, God said, "Go," and proceeded to tell Ananias his plan for Saul to believe in Jesus and to preach to the Gentiles, their kings, and the people of Israel. So Ananias was facing a huge giant, but God said, "Go." He followed God's instructions. He found Saul, and Saul was filled with the Holy Spirit and became the great preacher that God intended. In fact, much of our Bible in the New Testament, many letters were written by Paul, and we learn a lot about the gospel and a lot about Paul through those. Now, as we did with the story of David and Goliath, let's think about the obstacles that Ananias might have had to overcome. One, of course, was that the rumors of Saul's reputation for persecuting Christians. Secondly, was his own personal fear. Thirdly, at first, he doubted God's plan and he objected. But God said, "Go." So Ananias must have had some strengths. First, he was a disciple. Secondly, He listened to the Lord. Thirdly, he was willing to change. And finally, he obeyed the Lord. You see, in both of these cases, there are obstacles that these people had to overcome. But there were also strengths. And the biggest one was that they had faith and they obeyed. How about you and I? Let's talk about our giants, yours and mine. I'm just going to talk briefly about a big giant that I faced this past year, and many of you know about it. My husband was very ill, was hospitalized from September to December about five different times. They found out he had an infection in two of his heart valves, and at the end of December, on the 26th, day after Christmas, they told me that they're going to send Dean home and that I would be the person that would administer IV antibiotics through a PICC line for 6 weeks, 6 hours apart. I said, no. There must be some other way. You see, I'm not a nurse. I never intended to be a nurse. Some of my friends in high school went on to college to be a nurse, but I said, I never even wanted to be a nurse. I didn't even like to read books about nurses. I could put a Band-Aid and I could tend my children's wounds, but to do that for 6 weeks, 6 hours apart, they kept saying, oh, you can do this, Betty, you can do this, you can, it's really not that hard. And I thought, yeah, because you're in the nursing profession, you know how to do it all the time. I said, there must be another way. And they said, the only other way is that if you put Dean in a nursing home for 6 weeks, at least 6 weeks. Well, I wasn't going to do that. The second thing was that I could take him back and forth to the hospital every 6 hours to have this administered. And then the doctor said, oh, Betty, I don't want you to do that. Not during COVID. We don't want him to be exposed to COVID here in the hospital. And it's winter time. You live in the country. No, you can do this. You can do it. We'll have some home health people help you even. Well, there. Okay, maybe so. God was saying, go ahead, Betty. You are the one to do this. But I was filled with a lot of I had a lot of obstacles in my life. But God helped me through those 6 weeks. A lot, people, because you were praying for us. You prayed for Dana and you prayed for me. And I felt the strength of those prayers. Not only that, but many of you families brought food to our home. For 6 weeks, I remember when Billy called and said, what can we do to help? Can we bring in some food? Let us bring in some food. And I thought, for 6 weeks? No. I said, well, she said, well, let us do something. And I said, well, maybe two nights a week, maybe Tuesday and Friday nights. So she got it organized, as she always does. And various families brought us food. And I remember one day, and I'm going to say this without crying, and I hope I don't embarrass anybody, but one day I got a phone call, and the person said, Betty, this is Lexi Robinson. I'm going to bring food for your family, for you and Dean, on Friday night. And I'm wondering, have you anybody brought you lasagna? And I said, oh, no, we like lasagna. And she said, okay, that's what we'll do then. And I got off the phone, and I did cry. And I said to Dean, honey, I've never even met this lady, and she's bringing us food Friday night. The ladies from the church, he knew the ladies were bringing food, but here was somebody that I had never met personally, and she was bringing food. Her family was bringing food to us, not only once during those 6 weeks, but twice. I appreciate, Dean and I both appreciate so much your prayers and how you helped us get through this. He is recovering very, very slowly, not nearly the energy that he had pre-infection time. He loves to garden, and he's really had a lot of difficulty this spring and this summer. Our son Troy comes from Ellis, and Troy and I are doing most of the gardening. But Dean does supervise now and then. Friday night, as I mentioned in our prayer request time, Friday night he did have a mild stroke. It was very mild. It probably will not limit his activity, they're saying. But I do appreciate your prayers, continued prayers for us. In talking about giants and overcoming them, we need to identify our giants. Perhaps you've lost your job or looking for a new one. Perhaps you want to quit smoking or drinking so much. Maybe you want to lose weight. Maybe you're thinking about going on, taking some more education or doing something to improve your health. Maybe you have some problems at home to overcome. Maybe you're thinking that God is asking you to do the children's message, or teach a class, or lead a Bible study, or some other task. You know, only you can determine what your giants are. Secondly, like David and Ananias, you have to think about the obstacles that we have to overcome. For me, it was no experience in giving antibiotics through a PICC line or any other way. I guess I could have done a pill, but through a PICC line is much, much different. So I thought about my obstacles quite a bit. So what would your obstacles be? Perhaps you're saying, I don't have time to do this. I don't have enough money. I doubt that I can do it. I don't have any experience. As you get older, you might say, I can't, I'm too old. Just all kinds of excuses or obstacles that we come up with. But thirdly, God gives each of us strengths. Let's think about those. First of all, think, you certainly do have some experience in depending upon the Lord. Secondly, if you know it's the right thing to do, you can know that God wants you to do this thing. You have the knowledge of biblical examples, just like we did this morning with David and Ananias overcoming things. And certainly we have prayer. We sang the song this morning, what a friend we have in Jesus, all our griefs and prayers to bear. What a privilege it is to carry everything to the Lord in prayer. That's something that people that do not know the Lord, they don't have that as their strength. And it could be a mighty strength. And of course, we have our faith in God. In conclusion this morning, we need to realize that everyone has a giant or more in their hearts and in their lives. Please consider your giants and then the obstacles and your strengths. When God says go, always know that God is going with you. And he is your strength and helper at all times.
You've been listening to Betty Rep at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.